what's driving the conversation in California today? Every weekday at this time, we explore a topic that's making news in our state. This is the State of California.
Good afternoon. I'm Doug Sovereign, KCBS political reporter and host of The State of California. Well, it's not a new idea, but more and more cities and jurisdictions are giving it a try. Universal Basic Income, or UBI. The concept is that everybody's guaranteed a minimum amount of money, typically perhaps $500 a month, to help them meet their basic needs. And in some places, only those below a designated economic threshold get that money. It was famously pioneered in Stockton in 2019, and one of the latest to give it a trial run was Oakland, where philanthropic organizations teamed up to give 600 families $500 a month for a year and a half. And that pilot project is over now. The results of how it worked are in. And for more, we're joined today on the KCBS RingCentral Newsline by Jesus Jarena, CEO of Up Together, an organization founded in Oakland that partnered with Oakland Thrives to create and fund this program. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, Doug, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with who got the money, 600 families. How were they chosen? How did this actually work?
Yeah, so we had a criteria that we wanted to be at 138% or below the area median income, and as well, I'm sorry, of the federal poverty line, as well as that they would have to be a resident of Oakland and have at least one child under the age of 18. And what we did is we actually worked with, this was initially launched as then Mayor Schaaf was part of the Mayors for Guaranteed Income and got the call to be able to find the philanthropic dollars to be able to launch this work. So it was done 100% from philanthropic dollars. Working with Oakland Thrives, working with the city, we put out a mass call out and talked about what the criteria was. And we got over 2,000 applications that then were verified to meet the minimum threshold that we were looking for. And as a result of that, we did a lottery and chose the 300 individuals who in this cohort received it. There was an additional 300, so there were 600 in total that were able to benefit from it. And we went through a similar process for them as well.
So what did you find as far as how people spent the money and how it affected their lives?
Yeah, from the perspective of how people spent the money, what you can imagine is that most are using it to be able to meet basic needs. So whether it is for housing stability, whether it is to be able to find, and that means paying rent or finding money to be able to do their grocery shopping, pay electric bill, water bill, you name it, those basic needs that helps people think beyond those necessities to be able to support their households is really where the majority of the dollars is being spent.
One of the criticisms of this concept is that people think, well, if you just hand people money, they're going to be less motivated to get a job or earn a living. They're just going to lie around waiting for their $500. What did you find actually happened in this study?
Yeah, we found that the members or the participants in the study were 73% more likely to not only already have full-time employment, but as a result of that, 15% were employed full-time and 26% were employed full-time at the end of the study. So there was actually a drastic change that it not only got people back into the workforce, but even in some cases, people were able to find promotions and get higher income as a result.
Why do you think that is? How does having a little more cash in your pocket help you find a job, get a job, hold a job?
It's such a great question, Doug. I think what I continuously help people understand is when you're going hand to mouth at all times and just thinking about how to be able to support your household, how are you using the dollar amounts to be able to make ends meet? And there's always trade-offs, right? As things are getting tighter, I think more and more Americans are understanding what those financial pressures are. And so when you get that relief, it helps people start thinking, okay, I have the relief. Now I can take more action to be able to better support my household. So I think about the story of Aisha, who was one of the participants, who's been really good about sharing her story. And she talks about once like she got these dollars and was able to not only help support her grandchild who she had custody of, but also community members, and we saw that across the study, it was then she was like, I need a better job because it actually has positioned me better inside of my community in Oakland, and I want to have an impact for the city of Oakland, and me getting a better job is going to help me to do that. And that those are the things that I think are taken for granted when we're continuously putting these financial pressures and not rewarding families who are hardworking by giving them space to be able to do more.
I mean, I would just think just in terms of self-esteem, you feel better about yourself if you're not scrapping for every penny, every dollar, every day. So what happens next? Are there other pilot projects like this in the works? Is this an idea that, I know this had the sponsorship of the city, but that governments could adopt directly instead of relying on nonprofits to implement?
Yeah, I think for us, it's really critical to take these lessons and come back and say, all right, so if we know if we invest more in people who are struggling with financial hardship, they do more. What are the levers in policy that we can do to best reward them? And I'll just mention like a couple of things that are pretty easy. Already in California, we've seen an increase of the child tax credit. I think from a federal perspective, but also we can continue to increase that because what we know is that we invest more in families. They not only do better, one of the things that we found in the studies that the grades of participants increased better than those of the control group, where actually they lost grade marks. But also the current safety net, the way that it operates, it punishes that sort of mobility. And so as you do better, you get less, and there's no substitute. And so the earned income tax credit is a way to begin to substitute that, but also you can cut those penalties that create the cliff effects that we are all very familiar with as far as individuals. And I think that the third piece, and I'll come into housing because housing stability is a really critical one. I think from a policy perspective, yes, there is a need to continuously invest in building more to the crunches that we're seeing in the city of Oakland and in so many cities across the country. But it's actually, if you concentrate on the individuals who can stabilize their housing long-term by creating this sort of support, you actually eliminate the pressures of the market for them to continuously have to move or abandon or get evicted because they can't make ends meet. So those are a couple of different examples of policy changes that we can glean from these studies that translate into trusting individuals who are struggling with financial hardship, how to better invest in them without having to create huge infrastructure programs or services. Actually, what we always say is that people have the answers. Communities have the answers. Let's recognize it. Let's invest in them.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Jesus Arena, CEO of Up Together in Oakland. Thanks for being with us.
Really appreciate the time, Doug.
You can hear The State of California every weekday at 3:30 p.m. It's also available on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Doug Sovereign, KCBS.